Welcome to AMA Edgewise. I'm Dave Summers. AMA Edgewise is brought to you by the American Management Association. Our guest today on Edgewise is Emily Bennington. She's a frequent speaker on the topic of career success, and she's been featured on Fox Business, CNN, and ABC, and she's quoted in publications including Wall Street Journal, New York Post, and the Washington Post Express. She's a contributing writer for Monster.com, and she's a featured blogger for the Huffington Post, Forbes Woman, and U.S. News and World Report. And she's the author of a phenomenal new book entitled Who Says It's a Man's World? The Girl's Guide to Corporate Domination, published by Amicom, which is a division of the American Management Association. Emily, welcome to Edgewise today.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right. So, every year, there seems to be this huge media discussion about whether women can have it all. It's the year of the woman. It's the decade of the woman, all this stuff. Now, last year, it was Sheryl Sandberg's, and she's the chief operating officer of Facebook. It was her TED Talk. Now, this year, it was Anne-Marie Slaughter's Atlantic article entitled, Why Women Still Can't Have It All. Now, given you've just completed a book for corporate women, I mean, what's your take on this? Can women have it all?
Yes, but I think sometimes we fail to appreciate the fact that having it all is a really subjective thing. I mean, it's unique to each of us, so we each have to define it for ourselves. And that's where I think a lot of people, both men and women, get it wrong. I mean, we not only fall into the trap of basing what it means to have it all on someone else's version of success, but we also mistakenly believe that having it all means having it all at the same time. Mm-hmm. And I tell a story in the book about a period in my life where my boys were really young. I think they were 2 and 4 at the time, and I had just started a new job as the marketing director for a corporate accounting firm. I was chairing a regional young professionals group. I was in this leadership development program that had me out of town 2 nights a month, and I was trying to write my first book in the middle of that. And it was insane. And I would send my boys to preschool, and I wouldn't see them again until the next morning. And I would never consider that to be having it all. But the story that I kept telling myself was that if I didn't take advantage of all of those opportunities right then, they'd go away forever. Mm-hmm. But when I stopped running around and really made an effort to add some white space in my life, what I came to realize was that what I really wanted wasn't jiving with what I was doing. And so I started to prioritize the things in my life that were worthy of my time because they were in alignment with who I want to be and in alignment with what I wanted to achieve. And I just simply let the rest go. And to me, that's having it all. And that's what I think every professional, both men and women, should strive for.
Now, the title of your book is Who Says It's a Man's World? This comes very closely on the heels of other provocatively named books, such as Helen Rosen's The End of Men. Do you think women's success in the workforce has really come at the expense of men's?
No, not at all. But I do think that this is a unique period in business that is in desperate need of a particular style of leadership that women are really good at. And I don't know if it's just a collective distaste for some of the corporate recklessness that we've seen over the years, you know, where profit has been put before common sense in many cases or what. But I do get the feeling that we're standing at a crossroads now where the leadership teams within organizations are taking a very serious look at what their companies stand for beyond just making profits for shareholders. And, you know, this is great news for women because this is where we tend to get it right. I mean, women eat this stuff up because the whole idea of nurturing the collective is so central to who we are. And so I think this is why gender parity in boardrooms is really, really important because you need that values-driven thread to be weaved through every strategic decision that an organization makes. And you know, I'm not saying that men aren't bringing that to the table now, but what I am saying is that there's definitely a lifting of the consciousness happening at the grassroots level of business where the bottom line isn't the only bottom line, and I really think that women are carrying the flag in that charge.
You conducted a survey of 750 professional women for this book, and you asked them, amongst other things, if you could choose your boss based on gender. Would you rather work for a male or a female? Now, what was your finding in the response to this question?
Yeah, this is really one of the most interesting areas of research for the book. And the good news was that 56% of the respondents, they just want a smart boss. So they were completely gender neutral on that issue. But the bad news is that 44%, or just under half, of the respondents would choose a boss based on gender. And by a 3-to-1 margin, they would choose men. And keep in mind that all 750 of the professionals who took the survey were women. So of those who would choose their boss based on gender, 3-to-1 would choose men. And so when you deep dive into why, there were three patterns that emerged. One is that the respondents felt that men were simply more direct in their communications. So there was a lot of feedback in particular that women would dance around delegation mostly by coming in and, for example, making niceties before handing off a task that were later perceived as being really disingenuous, whereas men would come in and be pleasant, of course, but they were just more comfortable getting to the point. There was also the notion that women were more competitive with each other in the workforce than men, which personally I'm not sure is true, but another trait that popped up really high in the survey was that women were perceived as being more emotional. And as I was doing research about this, I came across a wonderful book by Ann Kremer called It's Always Personal. And one of the things that really struck me from that book is that all humans have a hormone in our body called prolactin. And basically what prolactin is a tear trigger. It's sort of what tells your body, okay, it's time to cry. And women have 6 times as much prolactin in our bodies as men do. Our tear ducts are also twice as large as men's. So between the tear ducts and the prolactin, it just really explains why women are more emotional and women tend to gush tears, whereas men tend to trickle. And I think that when you can understand this, when you understand that there are biological reasons why you might be acting a certain way, then you're in a better position to manage it. And so this is just one of my favorite questions from the survey, and I think that the results were really telling in that regard.
Your book also has a section devoted to the fact that being goal-driven actually drives us crazy.
Yeah, well, goals have always been a huge issue for me. I mean, I'm a student of personal development. I've been a student of personal development from the time that I was 15 years old, reading Napoleon Hill and, you know, all these other masters. And so I lived for the first 10 years of my career with this constant motivation to write it down and win and you can do it. And I was successful in my career. I tripled my salary just 8 years out of college. And so on the surface level, being really goal-driven worked for me. But I also think that there's a dark underbelly of goals that no one really talks about. Because while I was achieving a lot of what I set out to do, there was a lot that I wasn't achieving that I really, really wanted. And not getting those things really set me up for a few negative things. It was negative self-talk. You know, thinking, what's wrong with you? Why isn't this happening? Why isn't this happening faster? And it also set me up for playing the comparison game in the sense that I was constantly judging my success in relation to other people's. And this goes back to what I said earlier about having it all and why it's important to define that for yourself so you don't get caught up in the spider web of comparisons. But what was probably the worst of all, being goal-driven meant that I was constantly creating work plans, which meant that I was constantly living 1 to 2 years in the future, and that life was only going to be great then, you know, when I achieved the salary or the clients or the accolades that were on the work plan. And so what eventually happened is that over years of living this way, I built up a lot of anxiety around my career, and I don't think I'm unusual in that fact. I mean, I wasn't enjoying or being able to appreciate all of the wonderful things that I had achieved because I was so focused on the things that I needed to get done. And so, you know, for me, the natural next step was that I started taking a yoga class, which at first was something I was trying to do to get exercise because I knew that the exercise was going to be good for my stress. But what I learned on the yoga mat from my teachers and from the reading that I started to do was that being so rigid about my goals, you know, this has to happen by this date or I have failed, by being so focused in that mindset, I was actually blocking my ability to show up at work and be great in the present with the work that was directly in front of me right then. And so once I started to put more focus on who I wanted to be over what I wanted to do, then things really changed in my career. And that's really what Who Says It's a Man's World is about, is figuring out who you want to be first and designing your career from that place versus the other way around.
Emily, as a final question here, if you could pinpoint the number one issue that impedes the success of the women that you've researched for the book, what would that be?
Well, I see this with men and women, but I don't think that women in particular are strategic enough about the reputation that we want to create for ourselves at work. I think many of us fail to recognize that there's so much of what other people think of us, so much of that is directly inside our control. You know, I was working with a young woman from Microsoft not too long ago, and she just told this amazing story about how when she first entered the workforce as a new grad, she was assigned a mentor. And one of the first things that the mentor had her do was sit down and answer this question, and it was, when people walk away from you after having just met you or having worked with you on a project, what are the three things that you want them to think of you? Because, you know, there's so much talk in the workforce today about building your brand, but your brand isn't what you say it is. Your brand is what other people say it is, what other people think of you. And so, you know, she really put some time into thinking about that. And what she decided is that she wanted people to think that she had integrity, that she could accomplish a task and do it well and do it effectively. And so that became the filter by which she judged all of her actions and her interactions with her colleagues. You know, am I handling this situation with integrity? Am I accomplishing what I'm setting out to do? And am I doing it effectively? And so, once again, I just think when you put the focus on the who you want to be over what you want to do, then you're putting that focus, again, on things that you can control. I mean, you can't always control what happens, but you can always control how you respond to it. And so when you know who you want to be and you're working in ways that underscore those principles or those values, then you're owning the reputation that you want to create at work in a really powerful way.
We've been speaking to Emily Bennington, who's the author of the book, Who Says It's a Man's World? The Girl's Guide to Corporate Domination. It's published by Amacom, a division of the American Management Association. Emily, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
AMA webinars provide 90 minutes of focused how-to instruction and specific solutions for solving your most pressing work issues. For $149, you'll participate in an in-depth course taught by an expert who will answer your questions and guide you through the process a step at a time. For a complete schedule of upcoming AMA webinars, visit our events calendar at amanet.org/events. Here at the AMA, we value your feedback. If you've ever attended any of our webcasts, webinars, or seminars, you've no doubt encountered our feedback surveys. Well, our podcasts are no different. You can either email us at podcast@amanet.org or call 800-697-3406. Your comments may become part of a future program. Thanks for taking us along. I'm Dave Summers, and you've been listening to AMA's Edgewise.